Yeah, I don't want to carry my bag.
Blog Talk Radio.
Sportsaholics 24/7. We are live. I'm John, joined with my co-hosts Nick and Brandon. What's going on, guys?
Hey, John.
Not much, man. What's going on? What's going on?
All right. So we have a great show today. A lot of things to talk about. Big past few days in sports, but we're going to start off college basketball. One of the most anticipated matchups of the season, Duke and Syracuse played each other for the second time this year. Of course, the first time Syracuse at home narrowly escaped Duke, and now Duke is playing at home, and they won on a very controversial, well, they didn't win on this call, but this call affected the game. Near the end of the game, it was a close game. Syracuse took to the basket, and the refs called an offensive foul on Syracuse. Could have been a blocking foul. Jim Boeheim, as a result of arguing with the refs, got ejected. Duke shot some technical foul shots. Game over. Duke wins at home. Now, Nick, was it the right call?
Yes.
What do you, if you were the referee in that situation, would you have made
absolutely
that call?
Absolutely not. Are you kidding me? That's not even close. The rule is, once the offensive player starts with this upward motion, the defender's feet have to be set. When C.J. Fair started his upward motion, Rodney Hood's feet were not set. And that same exact call happened just about 2 minutes before, except it was reversed and the refs didn't call it. So absolutely not. That's an awful call. I can't blame Jim Boeheim for going nuts on that. They got screwed. There's no other way to say it. And people are criticizing Jim Boeheim for going nuts on that call. You can't blame him. Name me one other college coach who would not have reacted that way. Maybe not to the extent, but any other college coach would have been pissed. I'll tell you one thing: as a St. John's fan, Steve Lavin would have reacted in a very similar fashion if it was a game like that. And Jim Boeheim is frustrated because his team was undefeated, and you know, in the past two games they lost. I mean, I'm sure the loss to Boston College certainly didn't help his emotions in that sense. But, I mean, that's a terrible call. Come on. You can't. That's not acceptable, especially in such a close game like that. Let him play.
Brandon, would you have made the same call as the ref?
Well, first of all, I must get this point across. I have not seen this play. I did not even watch this game. So I, although, yes, it's very familiar to me, and I eventually did see it on SportsCenter, I did not see the live feed of this game. So I have no idea how emotions were running during this play, and especially when they made this call. But what I can tell you from what I know is that Nick is absolutely right. The defender's feet were not set, and it was not the right call. However, I'm going to give a little bit of sympathy towards the refs because it is a very hard call to make.
Yes.
I mean, I don't understand how they can see the defender's feet planted on the ground most of the time in a mix between, you know, 20 toes. It's just, it's very, very hard. And
Well,
you can't blame
exactly
the refs for making that call, but things happen, and Syracuse just lost it after that, and whatever.
You see,
I agree with you guys. But there's one quick thing I want to bring up. Now, the game was at Cameron Indoor Stadium, home of the Duke Blue Devils basketball team. And throughout history, I mean, especially recently under Coach K, Duke has been known to get big controversial calls in their favor at home. Now, I'm not saying, obviously, this game was, like, fixed or anything, because obviously it wasn't. But that's what home court advantage will do. And when you have an arena like that that's that loud, so many people, the pressure is on the ref to make the call that the fans kind of want to see. So it wasn't a – I'm not going to say it's a bad call because we're looking at the replay in slow motion and we can see it, and it's still controversial in slow motion. This ref had to see it live speed, and he had to make a judgment call, and it's such a tough call to make because the game was decided pretty much on that play. And, again, I don't blame Jim Boeheim at all for freaking out. Any coach in college basketball or
exactly.
NBA or high school or middle school would have done the same thing.
I don't know about middle school, but...
It was all right, maybe not middle school, but...
Any high-level coach would have freaked out over that.
Exactly.
Especially
it was a tough call.
High school coaches would have reacted the same way.
High school coaches, and I know this from experience, high school coaches have the best freakouts ever. It is awesome. This is high school coaches' freakout.
High school coaches are crazy. I know what I'm talking
about. All right. Now, one quick follow-up to this. This past week, Syracuse lost two games. However, they are still ranked number one in the country. You look at another team, Wichita State, who made it to the Final Four last year, almost won there, and they're the only undefeated team left in the country. Personally for me, I think Wichita State should be ranked number one. I know they play in a weaker conference than Syracuse, obviously. However, this team has dominated pretty much all their opponents. They've had some nice non-conference wins. And again, they returned a lot of the same guys that they had last year when they made that Final Four run. So it's the same team as last year, and I don't get it. Nick, do you think that Wichita State should be number one? Do you think Syracuse should be number one? Or do you think another team should be number one?
That's very tough because it's very hard to compare Syracuse and Wichita State. They never played each other. They're in two completely different conferences. To be honest, I haven't seen too much of Wichita State, to be completely honest. I know they have Klee Anthony Early. He's their main guy. Syracuse, like I said, I'm going to say it again. Even though they had some problems with their health inspectors on Saturday, that's all I'm going to say. It's still a buffet, and I still love the way they're looking. However, I would have to say, they don't seem to play that great under pressure. I mean, of course, Tyler Ennis is Mr. Clutch and all that, but against Duke, I'm going to be honest, they look tight. DJ Fair looked kind of tight. Jeremy Grant, I mean, from what I've seen, played horrible that game. I don't know. It's very hard to tell. It's very unpredictable. But that point you just made about Wichita State, actually Louisville, I mean, they also brought back a lot of the same guys they had last year. I mean, their starting lineup this year is almost the same as it was last year.
Yeah. But, again, Louisville's not undefeated. That's the thing. Wichita State is undefeated. I think they deserve it. Brandon, does Wichita State deserve to be number one?
Well, in the short opinion, yes, they do. In the long run, however, I think it is a very, very close decision because Syracuse lost to the sixth-ranked team in the country and was probably definitely one of the best college basketball players right now and maybe one in the past decade in Jabari Parker. However, Syracuse lost to Boston College, and any team that loses to Boston College – when they've only had a six-game winning season until they played Syracuse. And Syracuse is the number one team, undefeated, and they lose to Boston College. They should drop at least three rankings for that because they were unprepared, they were poorly coached, they were not hitting any of their shots, and everything was going wrong. And a team like Syracuse, who is the best team in the nation has to win that game. I don't care what conference Wichita State is in. I don't care what kind of quality opponents they've played. If they are undefeated and Syracuse loses to a team like Boston College, if we take away the loss from Boston College, Syracuse is still number one. Yes, they lost to Duke. Big deal. Duke is another great team. That's totally fine. But the fact that they lost to Boston College, Wichita State should 100% be number one.
Brandon, I see what you're saying. You're, like, judging their entire season based off of one game. Teams have bad games. It happens. That's like saying the Seahawks shouldn't be the number one seed, should have been number one seed in the NFC because they almost lost because they played that horrible game against the Bucks. And I know they didn't lose. They almost lost, but the same kind of thing. I mean, it happens. Teams are not perfect. They're going to lose to teams that they are much better than. I mean, that doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Nick, I'm going to disagree with you on that point. The whole point of the ranking system and having a number one team in the country is so that when a team loses, they're supposed to drop in the rankings. I know they have a bad game, but so what? They should still drop down. There's no reason for that. Wichita State was in the same position as them, and Wichita State took care of business. They did what they're supposed to. I can understand if Syracuse just lost to Duke this week, I'd be 100% supportive of them being number one of the country. Now, I do think that they are overrated, as well as Florida, who is, you know, really highly ranked. I think Florida is as well, also overrated, too. I think Wichita State could be the best team in the country right now. We'll see come tournament time. But it should be interesting down the stretch of the season.
Well, John, to your point,
it seems as if their entire season is completely down the toilet because of one loss. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, Nick, what happens in college football, huh? What happens in college football? You lose a game, you're out of the championship race. It's the same thing in college basketball.
No, it's a little different.
Maybe not
because the playoffs are a lot different. But you get my point, because it's the same ranking system.
Next year, this upcoming year, they've never had playoffs in college football. So it's different. I mean, I'm not saying one game doesn't affect it, but, I mean, you got to learn to move on. They had a bad game. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that they're not gonna that they can't win it. It doesn't mean that they can't have a great year. It doesn't mean anything. It's just one game.
I'm looking at the rankings right now, and I'm seeing, you know, Florida's number one, Wichita State 2, Arizona 3, Syracuse 4, Kansas 5. I think Syracuse should even drop more. They should be probably around 6 or 7. They should be behind Duke
for
sure.
Duke should be above them. And I think Duke, come tourney time, is going to be the best team in the nation, and definitely if they're not ranked number one, because if Wichita State remains unbeaten or something like that, they will certainly be the most feared team in the NCAA tournament.
Duke?
For sure. Duke.
You never know about that.
We'll save that debate come tournament time.
It's very hard to tell now. Like what John said, Florida, I saw Florida play. They looked excellent between Scotty Wilbekin, Casey Prather, Patrick Young. They really do look excellent. They're not quite a buffet. They're more of a cafe. But, I mean, I really do like the way Florida looks. Duke, it's really just Jabari Parker. To be completely honest, he carries that team completely. Rodney Hood can do his thing. Quinn Cook can do his thing, whatever. For the most part, though, it's really just Jabari Parker because he's so tall. He handles the ball excellently. He can shoot. He can shoot jump shots. He has a beautiful jump shot, and he can get down to the post perfectly.
Let's also not forget that Duke is being coached by quite possibly the greatest basketball coach ever.
Yes. Well, that too. I'm not discounting that. That's a given. But a lot of it is completely depending on Jabari Parker and how well he plays. And lately, Jabari Parker, he has such poise. I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen him crack under pressure.
I think he's going to be a stud in the NBA. I really do. I'm a huge Jabari Parker supporter.
He really could be.
We have to move on.
Yeah.
All right, so we have just over 16 minutes left in the show, and as always, we appreciate when you guys call in with any questions, comments about anything we've talked about already. We're going to be talking about the NFL Combine in a few minutes. The number to call in is 347-884-8496. Once again, 347-884-8496. Any questions, comments, concerns, whatever. Now let's move on to the NFL Combine, which is, in my opinion, the most overrated sporting event of the year. I really don't think it means anything. It means nothing, in my honest opinion, because you can get these guys from really small schools that have these insane numbers, and they can end up doing nothing. I think of a guy like Darius Hayward Bay. He went to Maryland, which is a pretty big school, but he recorded a crazy 40 time, and he was drafted really high because of that. And in the NFL, what has he done? Nothing, really.
He's been good.
All right, but he has not lived up to his draft stock.
No,
so quickly, we'll go around, and who has impressed you most at the draft? I have one guy who probably flew under the radar before the combine. Who has impressed you guys the most? Brandon, we'll start with you.
All right, well, this is very simple, and it's a name that you've probably heard for, you know, months now, and that is very simply Jadeveon Clowney. The guy,
oh.
I mean, we all knew he was a complete animal on the field, but what he did today at the Combine was just unbelievable. I have never seen a defensive player run the way Jadeveon Clowney ran. Even Warren Sapp was scared. You could look on the internet, look on Bleacher Report, so there's some sort of gif on there. Warren Sapp was scared, man. And I would blame him, because anybody else would be scared of this guy. But I have one problem with Clowney. I have one problem. If he goes too high in the draft, he's going to make a lot more money. And if Jadeveon Clowney makes a lot more money, he's not going to care as much. You saw it last year in the senior season. You saw it. Jadeveon Clowney declined because he just didn't care anymore. He's already proved his worth. He's already proved that he's an NFL quality player. And he's already proved that he can go high in this draft. And if he does go high, what's left to prove?
Brandon,
I don't understand
what you're saying at all. So you're saying that he didn't have a great year this year because he didn't care? Just because you don't have a great year doesn't mean you don't care. Just because you get paid a high rookie contract does not mean you're not going to care. Money does not heal all your tame your sweet tooth, as I should say.
It's not like I don't care.
He still has a lot to learn. He still has a lot to prove. You can't tell me that Jadeveon. I mean, to be honest, this year I have not been impressed with Jadeveon Clowney. He has not had a good year. He is getting manhandled by the left tackle. Many times he's been manhandled against the left tackles. He doesn't play like his hair is on fire like you're supposed to when you're a defensive end or a linebacker. I've never seen it, and he doesn't have the size. He's not. I don't think he's strong.
Right.
I'm telling you.
Nick, who jumped out to you at the Combine today?
What?
Who jumped out to you at the NFL Combine?
To be honest, I didn't watch the NFL Combine because I agree with you 100%. It's the stupidest thing. You think I give a crap about how fast Johnny Manziel can run 10 yards? It's not sprinting. I'm not watching track. This is the NFL. I care about what they do on the football field. I'm going to judge them based on what they did on the football field in college and how well they're prepared in the NFL based on what they do on the football field. You think I care if I see Blake Bortles throw in a shorts and a T-shirt? Throwing in shorts and a T-shirt is completely different from throwing in an NFL pad. Okay, that is completely different. And listen, if I'm not mistaken, Blake Bortles put up very high numbers. But, I mean, he is NFL ready. He's going to go high in the draft. I predict that the Texans are going to take Bridgewater. They're not going to take Manziel because Bill O'Brien and Manziel have had some beef, all that. But I didn't watch the NFL Combine just because I don't give a crap.
All right, well,
yeah.
Nick,
and
I have a good question for you. Who do you think is going to be the best player out of this draft class?
Well,
come 5 years
from
now.
Well, by what position? It's hard to compare.
Any position. What player out of, you know, the household names that we know, do you think is going to be the most successful in the NFL 5 years from right now?
5 years from right now. I mean, listen, that's very hard to tell. Well, first of all, one name that's going over everybody's heads is Aaron Murray. He has a possibility. You never know. I don't think he'll be the most successful.
No.
But, you know, Aaron Murray certainly has plenty.
If anything, he'll turn into Russell Wilson without a ring.
Hold on. One of them is Sammy Watkins. Trey Mason.
All right, okay,
I think Sammy Watkins and Trey Mason, those are the ones that I really think are going to be the most successful in the NFL.
Now there's just a guy I quickly want to bring up. Because before the Combine, not many people heard of him. Now, I did hear of him. I've been watching him closely for a few years. His name is Dre Archer out of Kent State. Now, Penn State a few times the past few years, and this past year they played each other, but Dre Archer was injured, so he was out of the game. And I was really disappointed because this guy is arguably the most unique football player I've ever seen. He does everything for his team. Now, you know, to be fair, it is Kent State, so they don't have a lot of weapons. But what this guy did, and I'll just give you his 40-yard dash time today. He almost set a record. He ran a 4.26 in the 40-yard dash. And, you know, I agree with you, Nick. The combine is very overhyped. But watching this guy in college, he's a mix of Percy Harvin, Tavon Austin, and Darren Sproles. He's so fast. He can catch. He can run. He can find holes, follow blockers. He can do it all. So this is a guy that I'm going to be looking out for in the draft. I think his draft stock went shooting up after this combine. I'd be interested to see what team tries to get him. And I think that a team that he could fit really well with, especially if they'd get Johnny Manziel, is the Cleveland Browns. Because you look at that, they already have Josh Gordon, who's a big physical receiver. Now you get a guy like Dre Archer in there. I don't know if he'll be off the board by the time the Browns pick, but I think he'd be a good fit for them.
I agree with that 100%. I've seen Dre Archer play a few times, to be honest. Not really very much. I don't know that much about him. But I do know he is a very versatile player like that. He can play a little – he's mainly a running back, but he can play a little bit of wide receiver too. He's very fast. And, yes, I agree with that. Because the thing with the Browns is that, well, A, they need a quarterback. And
which
B, they
will
just,
solve.
They
I'll get to that in a second.
Up. Now, the Browns lack a running game. So that's one of the main reasons why I want them to get Manziel and adding another runner on the team is just that's just more icing on the cake. That's great. So, yeah, I really would have to say I agree with that. And the fact that he could also play wide receiver, then that's just even more icing on the cake. So I don't see why not.
All right, back to Cleveland for a second because this is who I think. The Cleveland Browns have the fourth overall pick in this year's draft. Houston's got number one. They're probably going to get Bortles or Bridgewater. Number two and number three is probably going to be the guy who doesn't get picked by Houston and Clowney, which leaves Cleveland at number four. And if Cleveland sees this one guy at number four, he's their perfect match. Johnny Football and the Cleveland Browns are a perfect match because Cleveland has lacked two things since their return to the NFL. An offensive playmaker, someone who is versatile enough. I mean, Josh Gordon has been the closest thing to it since, but even he is getting thrown to balls by Brandon Whedon or Brian Hoyer or some other BS quarterback like that. And the other thing the Cleveland Browns have lacked is a quarterback
and a running game.
Johnny Manziel fits both of those things, and he fits both of them extraordinarily well. Johnny Manziel, we're looking at a kid who's got the accuracy of, maybe Aaron Rodgers or something like that.
Oh,
my God.
Don't go that far.
Not yet.
His talent level could reach there for sure. And he's got legs like Cam Newton, and he's got that already. And let's be honest with ourselves. Has there ever been a more polarizing figure in the NFL, in Johnny Manziel? No matter how many games Cleveland wins or loses this season, should they pick him up, the Cleveland Browns will be must-see TV. The media for the Cleveland Browns would be through the roof.
I 100% agree with
that. He's not going to have many distractions there. He's not going to have many distractions because it's Cleveland. He's not going to get in a lot of trouble. He's going to be well-coached under Mike Pettine, who I think is a very underrated coach. And honestly, if they get Manziel and this kid Archer that you've been talking about, I see them going 7-9-8 and 8 dark horse for the 6 seed in the AFC. I really do.
Yeah, I agree with you on that because another thing, if Johnny Manziel does go to the Browns are a team that has a certain stigma about them. They're always going to lose. And, hey, that might happen Johnny Manziel's first few years. But the great thing about Johnny Manziel is that he has a certain type of swagger. He doesn't care what people think. He just keeps going. He does his thing. He does what he does best, which is play quarterback, which is, run, which is throw well. And the Cleveland Browns really need a guy like that because they've had so many – it's like a revolving door at quarterback. It's crazy. It's less unstable than the Middle East.
And another good point about Johnny Manziel, he has the most upswing to him in this entire class. He has the most upswing to him since, Andrew Luck. And I think that this quarterback class that we're looking at could be as good as the 04 class with Rivers, Eli Manning, and Ben Roethlisberger. And that's been the best quarterback class since the 80s. And Andrew Luck on RG3 and Russell Wilson are already on their way. I think this class can overtake them
and be as good as the 04 class.
Yeah, that's that's an interesting thing.
There is one little problem with Johnny Manziel. I do think, now you guys might disagree with me, I do think he's a little bit of a twig, to be completely honest. My worry of him for him is because he might end up like RG3. Look at how RG3 ended up getting all beaten up after these past 2 years. Johnny Manziel has to learn. Now, I mean, there's a good chance he will. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't. I wouldn't be surprised if he does. He has to learn. If you're going to be a running quarterback, you have to build yourself up and you have to learn how to be smart. He has to learn how to model his game more after like a Cam Newton, a Russell Wilson, a Colin Kaepernick. Smart runners who are built well and can take hits. RG3 is not built as well as they are. He can't take as many hits, and he's not as smart as Colin Kaepernick, Russell Wilson, or Cam Newton.
What's wrong with me saying it?
John, you say it, because we probably have the same point.
They're very different runners.
Okay.
That's my opinion. Like, I look at a guy like RG3. RG3 is more of like a power runner. He can, you know, go into guys, break tackles. But Johnny Manziel is elusive. Like, watching him play in the Chick-fil-A Bowl last game
finesse.
In college, he's much more finesse than RG3. Exactly.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think that'll
mean,
lead to less injuries.
It's a dangerous style of play either way. It's still a dangerous style of play. Like, I really do think he will learn, and I think he'll be okay, but it's just a concern that teams are going to take into consideration because they'd be really pissed if they take, you know, a top prospect,
now,
they pay him millions of dollars, and he's hurt the whole season. I mean,
Nick, before we move on, I just have one last thing to address about Johnny Football. I've heard a lot of people complaining about his height. And that he's too short,
he's not even six feet.
But remember this. Who is the quarterback who won the Super Bowl this year? Russell Wilson. How tall is he? 5'11". And he's barely 5'11". Drew Brees,
isn't that tall?
The sole owner of the passing record for yardage up until this season, obviously when Peyton Manning went off, he's not even 6 feet. Drew Brees could barely see over his offensive lineman, and he could break a passing record. Johnny Manziel is 6 feet tall. The kid, there's no problem with height in the NFL.
I never said there was.
Clearly, there's no problem. So I don't understand why everyone keeps saying that, oh, he's too short, oh, he can't see, he's going to have a lot of problems, he can't get the ball over everybody. No, not at all.
Exactly.
I think he's right mentally, too. He clearly has a lot of confidence.
Yeah. All right. We should move on before we end up here.
Yeah, we have 2 minutes left in the show.
All right. So, what about Westbrook?
Quickly, if anyone wants to call in, you know, just under 2 minutes left, the number is 347-884-8496. Now, we're going to move on. Westbrook. We can talk about that.
What's wrong with the Thunder right now?
Here's what I think it is. It's not really anything that's wrong. The issue is Kevin Durant, with Russell Westbrook out, was pretty much the only scorer on that team. And he was playing at such a high level that any difference between that high level and anything lower is now a disappointment. That's just my point of view. Make it quick, guys.
No.
We only have like a minute, but what do you guys think?
There's actually a bit of a problem, and that has nothing to do with Russell Westbrook and his level of play and his coming back from injury. It has everything to do with the Thunder's management because they thrusted him right back into the starting lineup without even thinking twice about it after Kevin Durant just had maybe the greatest scoring month we have ever seen. That is a huge, huge problem because think of what, let's say, the Brooklyn Nets did with Darren Williams. After he missed a lot of time with an injury to his ankle for the umpteenth time, they put him on the bench. And he came off the bench and he played, you know, 19, 20, 22 minutes per game, and he eased back in to the starting lineup. That's what the Thunder should have done with Westbrook. I don't care that, you know, he's Westbrook. Reggie Jackson was playing great with Kevin Durant. And Russell Westbrook usually plays great with Kevin Durant. So they should have eased him into the lineup, should have gotten him back, should have made sure he's fully ready to be.
Brandon, I'm gonna have to cut you off. We have 8 seconds left in the show.
Thank you
guys for being on. We'll talk about this more next episode. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.
See you.
See you.